You've heard the reports, the dire words of warning from politicians and educators. America needs to invest in science and technology. We're falling behind China and the rest of the world. To compete, our students need to know the mechanics of the physical and the digital world. It's all true. But what about their spirit, their heart? What about not just the how, but the why? I'm Brian Ellison. Today on Central Standard, we take a look at teaching the humanities. A new report calls on the government and our schools to invest attention and resources to art, literature, languages, culture. It really is possible for an English major to get a job, they say, and for many, it is the humanities that give the rest of what we teach meaning. Can and should America recover its commitment to the humanities before it's too late? Find out today on Central Standard, after the news. We hear a lot these days about STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. The way of the future, the key to good jobs, the things that will make America strong and competitive in a global economy. But what if in all the emphasis on the hard sciences, America loses its heart? Good morning. Welcome to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. Today, humanities get their due on this program, and not just here. A new report from a high-level commission is calling on American government and educational institutions to invest more, far more, attention and resources to the humanities, and promising that doing so will bring crucial results for the future of our society. Joining us in the studio here at KCUR are Virginia Blanton. She is a professor of English and on the Women's and Gender Studies program here at UMKC. Welcome back to KCUR, Jenny.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
And also Wayne Vaught, Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences here at UMKC, also a regular, one of the ethics professors on Up to Date. Welcome to you, Wayne.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having us.
But I want to begin this morning with Gerald Early. He is professor in the Departments of English and African-American Studies at Washington University in St. Louis. He's also an essayist, and he joins us this morning from the studios of WashU. Welcome to you, Professor Early.
Thank you.
You were a member of this Commission on Humanity and Social Sciences that produced the report. It was called The Heart of the Matter. How are humanities the heart of the matter?
Well, I think the report wanted to argue that the humanities, insofar as the disciplines they cover and the skills that they teach, the heart of the matter insofar as being an educated person and being able to have the skills to be able to cope and be a productive citizen in society.
I know it was a very large commission working on this. Can you speak just a little bit about how it came to be, how the Academy of Arts and Sciences came to have such a commission in the first place?
Well, the Academy has been working on the humanities for some time. The Journal of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, Daedalus, put out two special issues in 2006 and in 2009 dedicated to the humanities. Another member of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences did a book project called The Humanities and the Dynamics of Inclusion, David Hollinger, which came out in 2006 on Johns Hopkins University Press. Also, the Academy had been working on humanities indicators or trying to amass data about the humanities because the humanities really lack a lot of hard data. So this report, putting together this commission, has been part of a bigger project that the Academy has been pursuing in relation to the humanities.
It seems like hard data and humanities are two ideas that don't even go together. What kind of data is there to collect about humanities?
Well, one of the things we were interested in was trying to find out what people do over the long term who get degrees in the humanities to try to amass the kind of data about the humanities, what people do with it, the kind of people who go into it, and so forth, that exists for the sciences. And the humanities, of course, have not really had this kind of collective data. Schools, individual schools may have data about particular graduates and particular majors, but having this kind of nationwide data was something that was new, and the Academy thought that it would be very helpful to give a kind of profile of the humanities and have a better idea of the impact of the humanities by collecting data about what people do with the humanities, the kind of fields they go into, what people do over the long term with degrees in it and the like, what people earn as humanities majors and so forth.
Now, before we get to some of those specific conclusions and findings, maybe we need to just clarify for our definitions. What do we mean when we say the humanities? What fields are we talking about?
English, philosophy, history, foreign languages, religious studies, that collection, that constellation of fields, generally speaking, constitutes the humanities.
Well, very good. The commission has produced a great little film about their conclusions, and it starts with a little explanation of the relationship between science and the humanities. Let's take a little listen to that clip.
My image is a beautiful flower. The stem of the flower is, in fact, STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. But the blossom of the flower is the humanities. Without the blossom, the stem is completely useless. It's just a stem. How essential it is that these two areas work in coordination with each other.
The sciences are the how, and the humanities are the why. Why are we here? Why do we believe in the things we believe in? I don't think you can have the how without the why.
That was John Lithgow and then George Lucas. Two leaders in the arts in America, explaining why they think humanities are important. Gerald Early from Washington University in St. Louis, the report named three broad goals for American education, and we'll discuss those over the course of the hour. Let me start with the first, and then I'll bring in our other guests as well. The first goal was to educate Americans in the knowledge, skills, and understanding that they'll need to thrive in a 21st century democracy. What kind of knowledge and skills would those be?
Well, I think that for those of us on the commission, we were thinking about the skills of reading, being able to have very high reading skills, being able to write very well, and also being able to have some skills with a foreign language and knowledge of foreign cultures. We thought that those in the 21st century, they would be sort of basic important skills for people to have to be competent and informed citizens.
Now, we do, in fact, as we were saying earlier in the program, hear a lot about science and technology and math education these days. Do you feel like those things are getting undue emphasis in schools today?
Probably so. I think because people, I think we really live in an age of science. I think people look at science as producing these fantastic sort of products, that science is something that will help us with our medical problems and the like. So I think there's something really kind of glorious and even heroic to many people about science and technology. So I think there is a lot of emphasis in that. And I think that people feel the economy is tending toward that way. And obviously many people feel as though job opportunities also tend toward that way.
Let me ask our other guest to weigh in here. Virginia Blanton is a professor of English at UMKC. Dr. Blanton, you've worked also as an undergraduate programs director. Do you think there's a conflict between humanities and sciences education?
Well, you're talking to someone who went to a liberal arts college as an undergraduate. And then I went on to do interdisciplinary programs as a graduate student. So for me, it's really hard to sort of separate the investment and engagement in those fields. And for those of you who know me, I'm married to a chemist, so I have to speak very carefully here. But I would say I don't think there needs to be a conflict. I think one of the things that's happened in the STEM fields is, one, there's been a lot of funding, and two, many of those fields are framed in ways where you get a degree and it's really clear what the path is to a career. That's not so clear in the humanities, and I think that's one of the great faults that we have as educators, is that we have not done a good job of helping students think about potential paths. As Professor Early says, we have a great number of skill sets that come out of the humanities, whether that's writing and reading, strong analytical skills and critical thinking skills. These are all ones that if you go to any job ad, it doesn't matter what the job is. It can be in STEM. It can be in the humanities. It can be in accounting. Every single one of them will say required skill sets include reading, writing, communication skills that are really strong, the ability to collaborate, the ability to communicate your ideas effectively and briefly to your teamwork, to your team, and being able to work productively together.
Just as important in the sciences as in any
absolutely.
Other field.
So in that way, there isn't a conflict in my mind.
Dean Vaught, you're the dean of the College of Arts and Sciences. You in fact work with both. Do you see it as a tension?
No, I see them as intimately intertwined, and I think the example of the flowers is perhaps a very good one. Often I think that scientists in particular get involved in what they're doing, their particular research project or whatever, and if you're looking on developing a technology, you're probably focusing on the skill sets to do that. But we're finding increasingly that the reliance on an interconnectedness between the sciences and the humanities, in particular in my own discipline, philosophy, you know, developments in neurocognitive psychology, you're finding a lot of interrelationships, especially as engineers are working on artificial intelligence. This raises a lot of questions to which they look at philosophers who've long since dealt with the concept of the mind and the self and what is it to be a person. And now as they push the envelope to raise scientific advances that really challenge some of those basic presumptions, they're turning to philosophers to try to better understand that. They're also turning to social scientists. So you have a disciplines that are emerging that include both the sciences, the social sciences, and the humanities, and to suggest that one of them takes priority over the other is really to lose sight of the really broad spectrum and how these disciplines can effectively work together.
Well, and one of the points you're making is that this conversation has been going on a long time, that this is not new.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the interchange between philosophy and the scientific world dates back thousands of years. And Aristotle was a scientist. Aristotle was one of the first philosophers and was intimately involved in both disciplines. And as a matter of fact, I don't think that there was the sharp division between the activities that the ancients were doing as they considered themselves engaging in the world and these disciplinary breakdowns that we have really, since the medieval period, really kind of codified in the way we set up the academy and have pursued the individual disciplines. It's relatively new.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Brian Ellison. We're talking with Virginia Blanton and Wayne Vaught of UMKC and also with Gerald Early of Washington University in St. Louis. Dr. Early, you were on the commission. One of the report's recommendations is that there be further study over what happens with humanities degree earners. You mentioned that earlier. Is that study needed because there's a common perception that the degree is less marketable if it's in the humanities? And is that perception wrong, do you think?
There is a perception that the degrees in humanities are less marketable. I think what we wanted in wanting to get the humanities indicators and wanting to get some data is what we want to try to do is to find out precisely with real data exactly how marketable the degree is. As of now, I would tend to think that that was something of a misperception about how marketable humanities degrees are. I was just talking to a group of people not too long ago, and a woman said to me in the audience, well, you know, humanities degrees, all you can do with those things is teach. And I had to say that that really isn't true, that actually humanities degrees prepare you for a broad range of things that you might be able to pursue and not just teaching. But I would think that that response from that particular woman is rather typical of many people who think of humanities degrees as just something which you can use for teaching.
Well, jobs in teaching, in fact, are pretty hard to come by these days, right? So Professor Blanton, you've counseled students about what to major in and what to do with the major once they get it.
Right. I think Professor Early is exactly right, especially if you get an English degree. The idea is that all you're going to do is teach. Actually, the top five fields for English majors are writing, teaching, some form of editing or freelance work for some kind of journal. Law is the fourth one. And the fifth, the most common career for English majors is actually business. They do very well in the business field. In fact, there are a lot of CEOs who like to hire English majors because their writing and communication skills are so good, but also their analytical and their collaborative skills. Again, I go back to that vocational sort of strategy, if people want to think about the best way to prepare themselves, those fields in the humanities and even into the social sciences that require a lot of writing and engagement with texts really prepare people well for dealing with the problems people have in real careers.
Wayne Vaught is the dean of an urban-serving university, one that is all about, in its publicity, you know, preparing people for the job market. What right. do you see happening with humanities degrees here in Kansas City?
Well, I see many of the things that that Jenny has mentioned in terms of majors. My own discipline, philosophy, has our students often go to law school, they go to medical school, they go into business. I think some of the initial one of the problems I think with the attitude that people have, especially toward higher education, the STEM fields, is they're sort of perceiving higher education as a type of vocational training. That is, we're trying to teach you a certain skill set and you go out. And if the idea was to create an inexpensive degree in which you quickly get people out and they don't have a lot of debt, we do have schools that allow people to do that. The goal of a higher education and the reason that the humanities are so important is that they're trying to broaden their horizons to give people opportunities to expand, to excel, to be entrepreneurial. And so when you see people with those skill sets and when you ask employers, what is it? And I ask employers in the Kansas City area, what is it that you want? And some of the ones that are mentioned consistently come up. We need someone who can write. We need someone who can communicate effectively, orally, with their peers and with our consumer base. We need people who can think critically, and we need people who have some original ideas. Most of them realize that on-the-job training in terms of the specific skills that they're going to have to do their job are going to have to be taught on site and on location. What they need are people who are well-trained, have lots of connections, and the humanities give you really the opportunity to do that because you're able to read a novel and think about another culture. You're able to think about philosophical ideas. You're able to pull all of these things together and really give substance to a wide range of career options, many jobs which don't exist today.
And is the implication then that the science and technology and engineering departments do not teach those things?
Oh, absolutely not. I think that they would say that, in fact, they do. It's just they do it in a particular format, in a particular fashion, and so they don't focus on particular areas, say as culture or philosophical ideas or the arts or the various other disciplines. And so it's not that and they will get very upset. And in fact, if you talk to them, they say they're not teaching their students to be critical thinkers. But it's the wide breadth of exposure that's going to give someone the ability to wrestle with unforeseen and unknown future situations in which they might encounter and to be able to pull those resources to really be successful in whatever situation they may find themselves in.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. Did you study art or literature or English or philosophy or religion or some other field that caused a parent to say to you, you're never going to get a job with that, or not? That's what Lindsay did. She says, as adults in the modern world, we must be prepared to acquire and shed literacies throughout our career. A solid liberal arts foundation that challenges the student to think critically and adroitly acquire new knowledge can prepare a student well for this world. Professor Gerald Early, do you agree that a foundation in the humanities is a better way to have a foundation for shedding literacies throughout your career? Acquiring and shedding, I guess I should say.
Well, I think that the humanities offer people great grounding in reading and writing and in understanding language and conveying things in language and understanding the formation of ideas and arguments. And I think that's essential to any person who really wants to be able to understand cross currents and that go on in cultures and the complexities of cultures and the complexity of various products that come out of culture, politics, art, and everything else. So I do think that in that way, the humanities are very good at that. I think the humanities are probably pretty good at also teaching people about the acquiring and shedding of literacies. Yeah, I think the humanities are probably pretty good at doing that. If you just look at how the humanities themselves have changed over time and how they've adjusted and the different things that have happened in the humanities over time.
I think we might have struck a nerve because I just saw all of our phone lines light up at the same time. Before I take one of those calls, I guess I want to sort of note that we've been talking about all of these benefits, which are mostly economic or possible employment benefits, that employers do, in fact, look for these critical thinking skills. But isn't there something about teaching humanities that goes beyond how marketable the degree is? Isn't there a benefit that's hard to put a dollar sign on, Professor Blanton?
I think that's exactly right. Most of us are responding to the sort of national conversation about if it's a degree that doesn't lead directly to financial success, therefore we shouldn't fund them in state universities. And so we've been on this track of trying to show how vocationally important many of these degrees are. But I think you're absolutely right that many of the reasons that people go into philosophy and literature and languages is because there's a great desire to experience the pleasure of human creation, whether that's in the visual and performing arts, whether that's in oral or sort of presentations. One of the reasons we love movies, it's why we love going to plays and to dance. I mean, that is really at the heart of that humanistic enterprise.
Dean Vaught?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, an image is coming back to my head that's stuck with me since probably I was a sophomore in college. There was a woman who was one of a major, I was philosophy and religion majors, and she was finishing her degree. And at some point she had mentioned that she wasn't planning to get any job when she graduated. And I remember one of the students said, well, why are you bothering to get a degree? And the instructor, who I very much well respected, said, you know, basically, well, there's a value to this experience in and of itself, not because of its vocational potential, but just because that she wanted the experience and that it was going to be valuable and meaningful for her life, she wanted to get a college degree. And it wasn't because she was, again, trying to get a particular job once she graduated. And I think that that's, you know, absolutely fundamentally true, is that a lot of the disciplines, and particularly the humanities, raise experiences and ideas about the human condition that are valuable in and of themselves. They don't really have a market value, but they will increase and enhance the experience that you have of life. It forces you to re-examine your life. And if we go back to the Platonic era, it's like the unexamined life is not a life worth living. It's like the humanities can help you enhance your appreciation and experience of the life that you live, just as a lived life.
But Professor Early, does that do any good for society? I mean, sure, it makes your life more worth living. Sure, it brings you enlightenment. Should our education be about you getting something, or should it be about society getting something?
Well, I think society is getting something insofar as we're able to better educate people in the humanities. And as a result, I think we give people a certain kind of power, actually, when we educate people well in the humanities. I've always been a very, very strong advocate that the best thing you can do for poor people is to give them a great grounding in the humanities. Because in the humanities, you learn very much how to read and write, and you learn how to articulate ideas, and you learn how to analyze ideas. And I think that those are essential things to have for an informed citizenry, and I think it's a very important to have for people, particularly people who are poor and who need to have weapons at their disposal, cultural weapons and intellectual weapons, to advance their interests. And I feel that the humanities are a great tool to help poor people advance their interests.
I'm struck by some of the language in the report itself. It makes reference to things like national security, experts in national security equipped with cultural understandings. It talks about the ways that humanities are important for a stronger America. It sounds like it's the language that is sometimes used for, well, science, technology, engineering, and math. is this an exercise in marketing the humanities?
I think it's partly that, but I think it's also just trying to remind people historically of how important the humanities have been in foreign policy, how important it's been in many ways that many people don't understand. For instance, Let's look at something like Lawrence of Arabia and the British overthrow of the Ottoman Empire in Arabia. That happened because of humanists. Lawrence was a humanist. The people around him were humanists. They were called at the time Orientalists. They had a strong interest in Arabic language and Islam. And the reason why the British succeeded was because they had humanists who went in there who helped to foment the Arab Rebellion. That's just a very small historical example of how important humanists are to pursuit of any kind of foreign policy.
Let's take a call from Brenda in Shawnee, Kansas. Brenda, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you. I was calling because I actually went to college twice. I first studied business to do as my family encouraged so that I could get a job. Well, I worked for a law firm, and I knew that that was not my calling, and I really didn't like it. So I went back to college and studied fine arts, which was always my passion. I did get a job. I worked at Hallmark for 28 years, and I've recently retired, and now I'm in elementary art education at a charter school, and I'm just realizing how grateful I am that they appreciate the arts at this school, and I feel that it's really a disservice to the children to get rid of the creative programs as the first thing that schools sometimes do when there's cost cutting. I think teaching children, as the guy who was previously on just said, giving children these gifts of being able to communicate and come up with ideas and just all the things that they learn in the arts and humanities, I truly believe is the way to solve some of the poverty problems that we do have in the inner city.
Brenda, thank you so much for that call. We really appreciate it. We have a lot of calls to get to, but Brenda, appreciate your calling. I do want to ask about something she said there. How much of this problem is solved not at college level, where all of our guests today teach, but much earlier in K-12 education? Wayne?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that one of the points that's being made here and is really needs to be emphasized is how powerful the humanities are and subsequently how dangerous the humanities are. Plato was particularly very skeptical about the humanities. He felt that they were a potential threat. The threat being because of the ideas that they generate and the excitement. And if you look throughout history at any culture that has tried to oppress people, the first thing they do is they eliminate books. They eliminate the cultural experiences. They take away the humanities in order to maintain and control an individual. So if you're trying to get someone out of poverty, if you're trying to provide opportunities for people, one of the most effective ways of trying to do that is to give them exposure to the very types of experiences which we find in the humanities, which are going to give them ideas, are going to give them abilities to articulate the ideas, they're going to give them an excitement. I mean, one of the things we find, I think, in particular in cycles of poverty is people just don't know how to get out of it. And often it's because they don't have role models, they don't have ideas, they don't think of themselves as being able to overcome those experiences that they are familiar with. And so when you give someone in K-12 books and literature and opportunities to think about things broader and bigger than the experiences that they've had, you're giving them the very tools that are going to allow them to escape.
Virginia Blanton?
Well, I wanted to point out in Brenda's particular case that if she had been encouraged the first time she went to college to major not just in one field but in two or three, her vocational shift would have been much easier and cheaper.
So you encourage double majors.
I do. No. Major in at least two disciplines and minor in a third.
Because and have one of them be a humanities sort of discipline.
Absolutely, because one, you're going to get that training and that experience and that joy. But also, you don't know where your life's going to take you. And the majority of people I know have changed careers multiple times.
Let's take one more call before our break. Daniel is in Kansas City, Missouri. Welcome to Central Standard, Daniel.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Doing great. What's your comment?
I really went to school for humanities, and I really, really enjoyed it. I would rather not done anything else. After I got out, it's been hard to kind of even find all these people that are looking for creative writers and individuals to hire. So I'm just having kind of like, I just kind of want to know where would I even start looking for these.
Stay on the line, Daniel. Gerald Early, where does Daniel, with his passion for humanities and creative writing, go to actually put it into action after he graduates?
Well, I think that he would need to go to look to see if he can write for some magazine of some sort or some local newspaper. You start out in this kind of profession. I started out writing myself. You start out at a very low level usually. I remember when I first got out of college, I wrote for one of these alternative newspapers, and I was paid $15 an article. But it was great experience, and I was able to practice my craft and get better at writing. I also think that nowadays with stuff going on online and with blogging, there are lots of ways that you can get yourself out there in so far as the kind of stuff that you do and with your writing and connect with an audience. I think there are, in fact, more ways now with the internet than there have been before.
Okay.
Daniel, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, when we come back, we'll continue this conversation about humanities today. We'll explore just how bad a shape things are in and what local colleges and schools can do and are doing about it. We also want to hear from you. Do you wish you'd taken more English or less? And if you're more of a STEM kind of person, a science, technology, math kind of person, what value do you find in the humanities? I'm Brian Ellison. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR.
Here in this part of our show brought to you by the Professional Organization of English Majors. If you're graduating from college and looking for a job, you're probably hoping to avoid the fate of so many English majors.
Welcome to Burger World. Would you like to try our two-pounder with a pound of fries and gallon of soda pop?
Maybe you're hoping to teach school instead.
So, The Scarlet Letter is a book about shame. Okay, it's about shame and public humiliation and redemption and lying. So, has anybody here read that book? Anybody Googled it online? Scarlet Letter? Anybody? Anybody know what scarlet means?
This is Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Brian Ellison. That, of course, was Garrison Keillor, Fred Newman, and Sue Scott with one of the recurring gags on A Prairie Home Companion, a send-up of English majors. Is that all fun and games, or does it hurt because it's true? Today we're talking about the present and the future of the humanities in America and in American education with our guests, Virginia Blanton, who is an English professor at UMKC, Wayne Vaught, who is Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences here, and Gerald Early, who is also an English professor in African and African-American studies at WashU in St. Louis. Does it hurt because it's true, Dr. Blanton?
No, I take that as a great point of pride. You know, there are lawyer jokes that have been around for a long time, and if there's that means that the profession has actually achieved a certain level of cultural awareness. So I'll just take that as a great compliment.
We talked actually in the first half of our show about some of the jobs that actually are widely available for English majors and other students of the humanities. I wonder if our listeners might have more to say about that, though. Let's talk to Adam in Kansas City, Missouri. Adam, welcome. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us what you're thinking today.
Yeah, I'm a philosopher at Park University here on the outskirts of Kansas City in Parksville. And I think that one thing I'd like to introduce to the conversation for your panelists to reflect on is that when we're teaching the humanities, it seems like one thing we're kind of bad at is showing students the skills they're acquiring when we're teaching them the great points of culture, the great points of philosophy, the great points of literature. So I'm wondering if there's a way that your panelists think we can all get better at that. I know we're trying to get a lot better of it at Park.
Yeah. How can we teach this in a way that brings all of it together? Dean Vaught?
Well, it's been actually a national conversation, and it's one that we've been having at UMKC, and it's one that schools around the country are struggling with, particularly as they pertain to general education core requirements. And it has been the case that around the country, schools have required general education requirements. Often the humanities fit into that core. And generally, the finding was that students had no idea why they were taking these courses, and oftentimes faculty really had no idea what exactly it was that the students were supposed to be getting out of those courses. And so we have tried, and schools are, and accrediting bodies are requiring us now to be much more outcome-based and identify learning outcomes and tie those to the courses that students are supposed to be taking as part of the general education core, and then demonstrate either through portfolios or other methods in which we can show students the skill sets that they are getting and demonstrate that by taking course X, Y, and Z, you're supposed to have gotten skill A, B, and C, and then we can demonstrate to you through some method, and schools are doing different ways of doing that, of then showing the student the value that's coming from that. So I think the student's point is exactly right on target. It's a complaint that students have had, and rightfully so, that the faculty, while we know and we are talking about, we know why these are important topics, we really haven't gone back to square one to give that type of grounding. And that's part of the process right now that higher education is undergoing.
But I think the way humanities are taught is an issue that is actually part of the national conversation. I wanted to ask you, Professor, early, one of the articles that brought a lot of attention to this study was by one of your fellow members of the commission, David Brooks. He wrote in the Times, the New York Times, that humanities' mission has always been to cultivate the human core, the part of a person we might call the spirit or the soul. But then he says, and I'm quoting here, somewhere along the way, many people in the humanities lost faith in this uplifting mission. The humanities turned from an inward to an outward focus. They were less about the old notions of truth, beauty, and goodness, and more about political and social categories like race, class, and gender. Liberal arts professors grew more moralistic when talking about politics, but more tentative about private morality because they didn't want to offend anybody. How do you respond when you hear the teaching of the humanities today characterized that way, Dr. Early?
Well, I mean, I think there's a certain level of truth in that. Certainly over time, the humanities have changed. It's because the academy itself has changed. When the academy became more inclusive and began to include things like African American studies and women's studies and the like, these things were brought in as kind of political movements, and people did bring them in because, in part, knowledge is political. And so their being excluded was, in fact, a political act, and they're coming in to be included in the academy as part of what the humanities are about was also a political act. I do think that it had an effect, and it changed certain things about how the humanities used to be taught. And, you know, nobody's going to use new criticism anymore, those kind of techniques to teach literary texts and so forth. These things have changed. I think that but on the whole, I think what we have added by what we've included has been enormous. And I think it has just really made the humanities flower even more than it has. There's a certain note in what Brooks wrote. I didn't read it myself, just what you read, that sounded slightly nostalgic. And I don't see where there's any real need to talk about wanting to go back to something in the past insofar as how we taught the humanities. I think there were certain problems in how we attacked the humanities and taught the humanities in the past. And I think that what we have going now, with whatever problems that exist, and there certainly are, I think it's enormously inclusive, and it brings in an enormous number of points of view that it did not do in the past.
Let's talk to John in St. Joseph. John, welcome to Central Standard.
Hello, my name is Dr. John Mazenko. I'm a retired physician after 50 years, and I was always grateful to my Jesuit education in 1953. Where in my pre-med time, I was required a major in biology and chemistry. However, I also required a minor in philosophy, including ethics, metaphysics, logic, etc. And after teaching medical students for 50 years who were totally ignorant of these processes and cared very little of the history of medicine, we now have a problem in which wisdom lags tremendously behind technology. So we have a bunch of technocrats, but no physicians amongst these doctors who are training. And the lack of humanities, they had no interest in their history of medicine. They had no interest. They didn't know who Aristotle was a lot of times when I talked to them. So the void is tremendous in medicine as far as I'm concerned. There were a few that were, But this lack of humanities in medicine is really a major void today in my experience.
John, I really appreciate your call. Dean Vaught, your faculty posting is actually in the medical school, right? You do teach in the medical school.
I do.
You teach ethics. Do you agree? Is he right?
Oh, I think he's absolutely right. Since I've been here 15 years as a faculty member and had a joint appointment with the College of Arts and Sciences and School of Medicine and teach biomedical ethics. That's been my area of research. And we'll actually be teaching an ethics course for students this fall, money, medicine, and morals, that we'll be talking about a lot of these issues. I think he's right that students have, and part of it, being sympathetic to students, is that the knowledge base and the amount of information, the technological information that they require, have to have and require to be successful is intense. And they become very intimidated by that, and they focus on that, and they're constantly, you know, they want to pass the boards, they want to do this. And the ethics part is some of them really grasp and appreciate it. Some of them see it as, well, that's important, but I've really got to master these technological skills or I'm not going to be successful. Fortunately, most schools, many schools, UMKC certainly requires our students to take ethics courses, biomedical ethics courses. And so the attempt is to try to get them to appreciate the significance. And I just – actually, this past weekend, I was at an event and had a student that – I recognized his face, and then I started talking to him, and he had been a medical student that I had 10 years ago. And he said, you know, I remembered in this class we were talking about Jehovah's Witnesses, and it just seemed kind of important, and I was into it, but just didn't really get it. And then I had this experience with a Jehovah's Witness, and it was this case, and it brought right back to me a lot of the things that he had talked about. So I think that he's absolutely right. But it's not just teaching at one time. You really have to get this integrated into a medical career or a professional career for it to be successful.
Mallory is in Kansas City, Missouri. Mallory, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you.
I've been an English major for a while, and I've just encountered so many people throughout my career as an English major who just say, oh, well, what are you going to do with that? Or what are you planning on doing with that? And a lot of those comments come from adults, you know, older adults who are educated. And when you hear that as a young person, you think, well, what am I going to do with an English major? So it's kind of discouraging to hear that from adults who sometimes you look up to them, and then they kind of have a negative connotation when it comes to certain majors.
Mallory, thanks for the call. This maybe goes with an email we received from Bruce. He wrote, the problem with humanities degree is the student racks up $100,000 in debt and gets a $30,000 job. An engineer or science graduate is going to start at $65,000 for the same college debt. We talked about this a little bit earlier, but Professor Virginia Blanton, you would argue that there's probably more jobs out there for English majors than people think.
I do think there are, and I think that one of the things that English majors and philosophy majors and foreign language majors need to do is be really proactive about how they prepare for completing their degree. They're gaining those skills, and as Dean Vaught said, one of the things we need to do a better job is sort of teaching them what those skill sets are, and we're trying to do that with our new Gen Ed program at UMKC. But in addition, we really want to press the importance of that interdisciplinary, doing two majors, as well as doing an internship, trying out several different places, trying job skills, learning about business, making those connections, minoring in business if you're in the humanities, because that really positions you well to step right into a career, which you may start at the bottom, as Professor Early said, but most people do, and you have to work your way up. And so I think you have to be really strategic and thoughtful about how you're going to play an English major, a philosophy major.
Joe in Kansas City, Missouri, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You've been waiting a long time. Thanks for sticking with us.
No problem. I'm a middle school music teacher, and my school is adopting the Common Core standards, which are coming down across the state. And I was on FaceTime, it appears, especially on the English side, that a lot of what your guests are saying are already lining up with what's going to be in the general education classroom. So my question is, do you think the line between core subjects and humanities is becoming blurred? And is in the very near future, is it just all going to be intertwined? The humanities are going to be essential and not an elective.
And what would that mean for you, Joe, if they became more central?
Well, that'd be great. A lot of stuff we teach in the middle school music classroom is creating and logic and critical thinking, and those are all things that are being woven into these new standards.
Thanks so much for the call, Joe. You know, Professor Early, one of the things the commission does is recommend some core curriculum standards that include humanities. What sorts of things might that look like?
Well, I don't think the report was real specific about the sort of things that might actually come out of that. But I do think that it would probably include more emphasis on reading, more emphasis on to humanities and understanding humanities as problem solving, which I think a lot of people don't understand. And to understand the humanities is sort of how people make choices to deal with certain kinds of creative issues and problems that they have. So I would think that music would become a much more important thing in K through 12 education, for instance, than it normally is. I mean, children are taught some basic things about rhythm, or children are taught basic things about singing and things like that. But to actually get children to understand more about what the process of music making is, the philosophy behind music making, and probably more about the history of making music and how music has branched out in many different ways and encompasses a wide variety of expression.
Yeah. Professor Blant?
I think there is something really important here. We often focus on literacy as one thing, which is reading and writing. I think we should talk more broadly about literacies, and that outside of textual literacy, which is really important, I think we need to talk about these oral literacies, what it means to be an engaged person, whether it's with music or with speech or with debate on the congressional floor. We have to be better at visual literacies. Do we just simply go to see a film, or are we able to critically engage with that film or an advertisement or a blog, some kind of YouTube video? That we have multiple literacies we're trying to address.
Let's talk to Robert in Kansas City, Missouri. Robert, welcome to the program.
Thank you for letting me join the conversation. I went to a small liberal arts college, and one of the things that, and I'm at my undergraduate degrees in history, what I found that was required there, and I know because of my experience teaching at a university and colleges here, is that there was all humanity majors, no matter if it was English, political science, history, or any of the other humanities, had to take a synthesis course. And it was required 9 hours towards the major, which there you had to have 40 hours in your major. 9 of those were the synthesis courses. I really strongly believe that maybe it's a structural problem, mostly with the bigger universities that require more and more specialization, that they don't have the opportunity to provide an opportunity to the students to synthesize that, which is a real major component, as I observed teaching in college with majors coming out of the humanities, just strictly specializing in that humanity. And that's my comment.
Thanks so much for the call, Robert. Is that a fair critique, Dean Vaught?
Well, I think it's absolutely a wonderful idea. Certainly courses that are interdisciplinary in focus, certainly courses that allow you to get a broad perspective can be very helpful. We've had at UMKC have had courses that were called foundations courses that were sort of supposed to give a broad spectrum. There are different ways in which institutions can incorporate that. So he had 9 hours, you said, of these courses. I think that the general idea of what they were trying to do there was good. How exactly that could be implemented, lots of different ways of doing it. But no, I think he's right on target.
There's another piece of the report that does have some data that's already been collected, and that's talking about funding. Federal funding in various areas, in fact, almost every area has actually increased over the last 7 or 8 years for math and physical sciences, for biological sciences, for medical sciences, business, engineering, even education has gotten an increase, but dramatic decreases for humanities and law. Also, the portion of a particular area's research funding that comes from the federal government, the majority in all those sciences is from the federal government. It's less than 25% for the humanities. Professor Early, the commission obviously would like to see that change. Do you really see it changing?
I don't see it changing very dramatically in the coming years. I think it's going to be about the same. The federal government, as far as its compelling interest in the humanities, I mean, I think that there is an interest in all students being literate. I think there's an interest in K-12 and wanting to make reading standards higher. I think there's interest in history standards and the like. But by and large, The federal government, I think their biggest interest in the humanities would be in foreign languages, because that's a skill that they need insofar as national security and foreign policy goes. And I don't see where that's going to change very dramatically in the coming years. I think how the pie is sliced up for the humanities will more or less remain the same, at least in the foreseeable future. I don't think that's necessarily bad, though. I think that while there's a need for increased funding, I think the humanities can do okay with the levels of funding that it's currently getting. I do think there are problems, as one of the callers mentioned, about the cost of the education compared to the job that you're going to get coming out. And I do think that that's a problem with the humanities. But insofar as marking the degree, insofar as the kind of job you can get coming out. But I do think that levels of funding, insofar as research goes, can be improved. But I don't think it's crucial that it has to be massively increased for the humanities to be able to thrive.
Do you think there's a better day ahead for humanities education, Wayne Vaught and Virginia Blanton? Wayne?
I certainly hope so. I do think that there will be. And a lot of it is doing this type of activities that are going on right now, is that recognizing the serious damage. I can understand that those who want to encourage vocational types of training, but to recognize how deprived and how detrimental this will be, I think it's going to push us toward more humanities education.
Quickly, Virginia Blanton, the last word.
All I can say is make sure you pick up a book and read it, go see a movie, engage.
That's Virginia Blanton. She's a professor of English, also in the Women's and Gender Studies program here at UMKC. Wayne Vaught is dean of the College of Arts and Sciences at UMKC. And Gerald Early, professor in the Departments of English and African American Studies at Washington University in St. Louis. Thank you all for being here with us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
You can subscribe to our podcast. You can hear this conversation again or access any of the previous shows at the Central Standard page of KCUR.org. Our apologies to our full board of callers, Carla and Laura and Karen and JR and Robert. Sorry we couldn't get to your call today. Try us again another time. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, with help today from Sangeeta Shastri, Claire McInerney, and Ross Steinmetz. I'm Brian Ellison. This is KCUR.